Okay, let's come to order. This is the October 25th, 2021 Clallam County PUD Commissioner meeting. And of course, we are virtual and we've got pretty good participation, so welcome. Our first order of business is approval of the consent agenda. And I won't read, we've got four items. These were sent out beforehand. Everyone had a chance to have a look at them. Do we have a motion?
Our
questions and discussion as well.
I move that we accept the consent agenda.
I'll second that motion.
We moved and seconded to accept the approve the consent agenda for October 25th, 2021. All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
All right, agenda revisions. Sean, do you have anything?
Yeah, I have two, Will. Under correspondence and communications, Teresa Lynn will be filling in for Nicole Hartman on the Waputa Scholarship Drawing.
Okay.
And then under staff reports, the follow-up on the customer easement, Colin Young is going to present that.
Okay, good. All right. Next item is comments from the public. Sean, do we have anybody or anybody on?
No, nothing in chat, but if anybody from the public would like to make a comment, please let me know now. Hearing none, Will.
Okay, we'll move on to business items. Our first item is the Clean Energy Implementation Plan, CEPIP. And Sean, you can introduce our consultant, right?
Yeah, so the next landmark in the CETA implementation is to prepare what's called a Clean Energy Implementation Plan, or CEIP. The first piece that we had to put into place for CETA was our low-income program that went into effect July 31st of this year, and this is sort of the next piece of CETA. The CEIP is a four-year roadmap that is required of all utilities in Washington State, and it has to be in place and adopted by January 1st of next year. So through this process, we consulted with Ted Light at Lighthouse Consulting in preparing our CEIP, and Ted also moderated our public process with local stakeholders, which consisted of tribal organizations as well as organizations serving low-income and vulnerable populations. You'll probably remember that Ted presented our conservation potential assessment earlier this summer, so I'm sure that you are familiar with his work and recognize him. And so with that, I will turn it over to you, Ted, to go through your presentation.
Thanks, Sean. Can everybody hear me okay and see the screen?
Yes, I think so. Ted, welcome.
Thank you very much. It's good to be back. So as Sean said, I'm here today to talk about the development of Clallam PUD's Clean Energy Implementation Plan. And just to give everybody some grounding, we'll kind of cover the salient points of the Clean Energy Transformation Act. As before, when I presented the CPA, I guess a month or two ago, welcome any discussions along the way. So the kind of the core goals and requirements of the Clean Energy Transformation Act, or CETA, are shown on this slide. In terms of like the clean energy requirements, there's the coal-free requirement in 2025, a requirement to be greenhouse gas neutral beginning in 2030, with up to 20% of the energy can be compliant with that through alternative compliance mechanisms like REC purchases. And then in 2045, everything has to be 100% non-emitting or renewable. It also includes provisions to make sure that that transition happens equitably, and the CEIP is kind of the every four-year plan to chart progress towards meeting those requirements. So So as I said, the CEIP is required every 4 years. First one due coming up by January 1st of next year. It has to be approved by the utility governing body, and that's why we're here today. As I said, it's the 4 year plan for meeting the CETA requirements for both energy and equity. And public input is required during the development, with the key word there being during. And so, with help from the Calm PUD team, including Sean, John, Tyler, and Matthias, put together a public workshop that I'll talk about coming up. So within the CEIP, there are I kind of mentally break it off into two different pieces, the first one being kind of resource planning, and the second one being the equity requirements. So within the resource planning part of the CEIP, the CEIP has to identify what it calls interim targets, and that's the share of retail load served by clean energy. And then it requires what it calls specific targets for energy efficiency, demand response, and renewable energy. And then the CEIP has to identify what it calls specific actions. And those are the actions the utility will take over that next four-year period to achieve the interim targets and the specific targets that you see above on the slide. The CEIP also has to identify how it's consistent with other utility resource planning. So the 10-year resource plan that the PUD puts together, we have to be, I think, consistent with that. Any questions so far? So the equity part of the CEIP includes a couple of different things. So we have to identify the highly impacted communities within the utility service territory, and those are defined by the state. So that's just kind of identifying what communities have been defined by the state, including that in the CEIP. We also have to identify what CETA calls vulnerable populations, and it doesn't CETA doesn't really specify who those vulnerable populations are. It just says we have to identify them through a public process, and so we did that as part of our public process. We also have to identify indicators that can be used to forecast how the costs and benefits of the utility actions will be distributed. So, anything the utility might do, if I go back here as part of this work, we have to identify, how the costs and benefits of that will be distributed. We also have to identify how the utility will reduce risks to those named communities, the highly impacted communities and the vulnerable populations. And because there is a public process requirement, we have to describe how the public input is reflected in the CEIP. So to look at kind of the resource planning part of this, worked with Calum PUD staff to kind of look at what loads and resources might look like extending out to the 2030 and 2045 requirements covered by the CEIP, and recognizing that a lot can change between now and 2030, let alone 2045. This at least kind of gives us a sense of kind of where things might be heading. And so you can see that in the graph on the left, and as you can tell, based on kind of where we stand in the colored or shaded areas relative to the dashed line, which is the requirement for clean energy, Calum PUD is in great shape. So based on these projections, we've landed on a target of serving 92% of the retail load by clean energy sources, and identified a an estimate of the renewable energy that we'll use that you can see there on the slide. That includes kind of what you might think about normally as renewable energy, like including like solar and wind. But CETA also broadened the definition of renewable energy to include hydro. So this includes hydro in that estimate as well. And as you can probably expect, there's no actions needed in this first interim compliance period covered by the CEIP and probably not the next couple either based on these projections. We'll note, you know, not a concern for this CEIP, but eventually when we get to that 100% clean energy requirement in 2045, we'll be you know, a little bit of a gap there to make up just based on, you know, current resources.
Ted?
Yes.
This is Rick. As I understand it, Bonneville's resource stack is 95% green. But I also understand that Bonneville is reluctant to articulate or document who's getting the 5% of non-green. So do we have any comfort on what type of resolution we have to provide for documentation? Because if we're dependent upon Bonneville to tell us how much of our resource stack is green and they're not willing to do it, you know, it sounds to me like it's going to be, it could be an issue.
Yeah, I can add a little bit here, and I welcome any further input from the Clallam PUD team. You know, in this estimate, we've used kind of an average fuel mix for BPA over the past 4 years, and so they do report, Bonneville does report their fuel mix as a whole, you know, not specific utilities. So we've used those averages across kind of the whole fuel mix. You know, I think all the utilities are going to be in the same boat, and we're kind of, I think, largely kind of figuring out kind of how we'll meet these requirements here. And, you know, some of the rulemaking is still ongoing, but I think at least for now, I think that's probably our best source of information. I don't know if Sean or anyone else has anything to add on this.
Well, yes, this is John. One of the reasons we set a target of 92% in retail load, we have to consider the quality of the water years over a four-year interval, which is the period of the CIP. So we figure that we got to consider, let's say, four consecutive rather poor water years might result in a value as low as 92% of our retail load served by what's described as Tier 1.
Well, I guess where I was going with the question was maybe us working with other Washington utilities can convince Bonneville of the need or importance of giving a little more resolution. Or on the other side of the coin, going back to the state and asking what kind of resolution they really need for us to document how much is green and how much is not.
You know, there have been discussions along those lines. You know, I think, you know, in particular, I think some of the Washington utilities are looking at out at that 2045 requirement and saying, you know, can Bonneville provide us with something that's, you know, guaranteed a, you know, 100% clean? I don't know how those conversations have progressed. I haven't been a party to them. I think maybe they're ongoing. I don't, correct me if I'm wrong, Sean or John or Tyler.
Well, this is Will Purser. I think there has been discussions along these lines. Bonneville has been very reluctant to the point of almost saying no. And they say there's statutory limitations in what they can do. But they're reluctant to carve out their zero carbon resources and provide that power. Kind of problematic because that's more or less what they're doing for California at the moment. So,
yeah, that's what I find disturbing is they're telling their preference customers that they can't do it, but they're doing it for the EIM.
Yeah, I think that's public power needs to push on that rope a lot more.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm.
So moving on to the specific targets, I was here a couple months ago and presented the results of the CPA. Based on that work, the four-year conservation potential was identified as just a little bit over 12,000 megawatt hours here, as you see in the table. So that is the energy efficiency specific target for the CEIP. In terms of actions to meet the target, just identified here that CLIL and BUD should continue its energy efficiency programs to meet the target. No real drastic changes I think are needed on that part. We'll add here that in 2023 there's an opportunity to update the CPA, and so kind of the later 2 years of this four-year target, can be updated with that CPA that will happen in 2023.
Yeah, well, this is Will again. Discussions that I've been privy to, the consensus seems to be that as renewables get cheaper and cheaper, it's very hard to justify energy efficiency measures, which are getting more expensive. So how do you resolve that? Can you just provide more renewables to meet that requirement, or what?
No, I think you're exactly right, and I think some of that dynamic has definitely starting to surface in the 2021 draft power plan that was just released. You see the amount of energy efficiency that was identified as cost effective is definitely smaller than what was identified in previous power plans. And, some of that is, holding true in the CPA as well. So, some measures are kind of going away due to baselines rising or, codes and standards continuing to rise. And so you're left with more expensive measures. And then, cheap renewable energy grows in its saturation in the market and power prices decline, you'll see that pressure hit energy efficiency as well. So, in this CPA and I imagine in future CPAs, you'll see kind of energy efficiency squeezed from kind of both the bottom and the top. And I think, in the I think we'll continue to see that.
The key words are cost effective.
yeah, exactly. Yeah, we've looked at a range of measures, but only include what is cost effective. So for demand response as part of this CEIP work, I completed a demand response potential assessment. So looking at different demand response product options across a range of sectors and end uses. And as a result of that, no DR product was identified as cost effective in this assessment. In general, I think the findings are a result of kind of the CLIL and BUD having a relatively small customer base to spread the fixed costs of starting a demand response program. Although some people may disagree about my characterization the relatively cheap demand charges from BPA, just paying, what you need for, capacity or, that highest demand on a month-to-month basis instead of, having to build a resource, is relatively cheap capacity, and that makes for tough economic competition for a demand response program. So as a result of that, for this CEIP, we have a target of 0 megawatts for demand response. So starting to transition into the equity section of the CEIP, as I mentioned, the first step was identifying the highly impacted communities. So these are defined by the state, and they're either defined as areas that you have had like significant environmental impacts, and this would include areas, you know, where it's near like a major interstate highway, or near like an industrial site where, you know, emissions might be a concern. Or the other sort of qualifying criteria for highly impacted communities is it's a census tract that has tribal lands within it. And so for Clallam PUD, the Washington State analysis identified 14 of the 22 census tracts within Clallam County as a highly impacted community. And all 14 were based on this second category here, the fact that they include tribal lands. And so I've got a map that I made here. And so the census tracts you see are outlined in this kind of thin black lines. And the census tracts that were identified as highly impacted are shaded in this light blue color. The ones that are not are kind of in this like gray beige color that you can see up here, as well as down here outside of Clallam County. I think as I mentioned, all of them were that were identified as highly impacted communities were identified as such because they have you know, tribal lands within them, even if it's you know, like in the case of this census tract here, just a small portion of the kind of the overall geography of the census tract.
Yeah, I can't read your map very well. Is Jamestown included in that? Looks like it is.
You'll have to help me. I don't.
Jamestown's Clallam tribe right there on the end of Squim Bay.
Okay. Oh, so like kind of right up here.
No. Squim Bay is over to your east, further east.
East. Okay.
I think it is. I'll say okay. It is. That's fine.
Yeah, I had to zoom out a fair bit to include it, but I'd be happy to take a snapshot as a more zoomed in map.
That's fine. It's
okay.
Fine. Thank you.
So then let's talk about the public process a little bit to, you know, in terms of how we identified the remaining CEIP requirements. So in discussions with Clallam PUD staff, we landed on conducting a workshop with local community organizations and to get public input and to meet that public input requirement. Kind of the rationale behind that was it allowed for greater breadth, you know, so and kind of the number of topics that we could cover, as well as depth. So, you know, the kind of the depth we could go on a single topic, and you know, also just kind of deemed to be the best and most feasible approach given current COVID precautions, and that's consistent with other utilities that have helped. Is largely kind of centered around conducting a workshop by having kind of meetings with local community organizations. You can see the different tribal and community organizations listed there on the slide. All provided great input, and the workshop that we had included vulnerable populations, you know, what risks they faced and what indicators used to measure the equity in terms of how the costs and benefits are distributed.
So why is Jamestown's Clallam tribe not included in the?
So Will, we invited all of the tribes within Clallam County. The ones listed here are the ones that came to the meeting.
Thanks, Sean.
Sean, did we invite the Clown County Economic Development Council?
No, we did not invite them. The ones that we invited were Peninsula Housing Authority, OLECAP, Serenity House, Jamestown, the Quileute Tribe, the Ho Tribe, the Makah, and the Elwha.
Okay.
So moving on, the vulnerable populations that were identified, we heard a lot about kind of different characteristics of vulnerable populations, and based on subsequent discussions I had with Clown Beauty staff, we kind of tried to boil that down into some different, cross-cutting characteristics. And so where we landed was identifying vulnerable populations based on low income, households with a high energy assistance need, remote customers, so customers that are further away from, Clown PUD service locations, and customers without internet access. For indicators, as part of the discussion in the workshop, we shared that the primary action that Clown PUD is going to be undertaking is energy efficiency, at least in kind of the near term. And in terms of energy efficiency, how the costs and benefits are distributed for that, is largely maybe or is maybe best measured through program participation rates and/or distribution of incentive dollars. So, who's participating in the programs, who's getting the incentive dollars. So that's what we talked about in the workshop. In general, all customers benefit from cost-effective energy efficiency that's acquired, and it keeps rates low over the long term. But some customers maybe benefit a little bit more from those if they have the ability to participate in the programs, so that's kind of what we're focusing in on in the actions to reduce risk that I'll talk about coming up here will help make sure that everyone benefits And again, these indicators will be used to track the equity in the distribution of the energy efficiency program benefits.
Ted, I have a question. Do the energy efficiency rules inside the program, do they disallow battery storage as a form of energy efficiency?
I don't think that would be considered energy efficiency. That might be considered more along the lines of, demand response. It kind of depends on, how you're using the battery. If the battery is stored up, in off peak and then, releases energy during peak demand times, that would maybe be a demand response measure. But we did not look at batteries as part of the demand response potential assessment, however.
Yeah, we maybe do that next.
Yeah. So for the actions to reduce risk, we started the workshop conversation on just a kind of a high-level general discussion about what risks the highly impacted communities and vulnerable populations faced. And so kind of to summarize that discussion, it really came down to the ability to meet basic needs, food, housing, transportation, things like that. We talked a lot about unstable housing, people losing housing due to, home sales or, loss of income, things like that. the participants in the workshop also talked a lot about unhealthy homes and like health consequences from that due to moisture or, you know, deferred maintenance, things like that. And we also talked about, you know, an inability to access services for a variety of reasons, whether through transportation or, you know, cognitive impairments, you know, what have you. Those were kind of the main categories of risk that were discussed in the workshop. In terms of what Clallam PUD can do to help alleviate those risks, there's already a program and a plan in place to provide direct financial assistance to those vulnerable populations and highly impacted communities, with the ability to expand that in the future to include conservation as well as renewables. We also talked about how Clallam PUD could help make sure that everyone is getting those benefits and that assistance through different cooperative agreements with the local organizations. And that would cover things like outreach, just to make sure that, you know, everyone who is eligible for services was signed up to receive them, and, you know, could potentially also include other services, such that, you know, maybe, you know, a community organization could cover some of the costs of, you know, repairs to homes needed to make them serviceable, and then, you know, Clallam PUD could cover the costs of weatherization, things along those lines. Any questions here? So this is just the slide to kind of wrap it all up and pull it together. So you can see the different targets for this CEIP in the table on the top left. You know, and in terms of specific actions needed to meet those targets, it's largely just continuing to implement the energy efficiency programs that are in place. And, you know, the actions to reduce risk, as we talked about, include directing direct financial assistance, as well as, you know, exploring how cooperative agreements with the local community organizations can help further and make the most of those programs. That's, I think, my last slide. I wanted to express thank you to Sean and John and Tyler and Matthias for all the collaboration on this. It was great to work with them on this, and welcome any questions.
It might point out that in the package there's also the printout of CETA requirements for the Clean Energy Implementation Plan. But thank you, Ted. It's a good presentation.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the questions.
Thanks.
Thank you, Ted.
Well, this is Tyler King, power analyst.
One second, Tyler. Well, you're muted there.
I'm sorry. I pointed out that the Clean Implementation Plan requirements and CETA is attached as for information, and I announced Tyler, but I was muted, so sorry, Tyler.
Oh, that's okay. Anyway, staff is proposing Resolution 2219-21 for adoption, establishing the 2022 to 2025 Clean Energy Implementation Plan. Once adopted, the report will be sent to the Department of Commerce, packaged up with all other state utility submissions, providing a comprehensive report to the governor.
Hey, Will, you're muted.
That's funny. I don't know. Must just be a mental perk. Anyway, we have a recommendation to approve Resolution 2219-21. So if we have a motion, we'll get on with it.
I move that we approve Resolution 2219-21 establishing the district's 2022 through 25 Clean Energy Implementation Plan.
Now it's Jim, your lips are moving, but I think you're muted.
I'll second the motion.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded for approval of Resolution 2219-21, establishing the district's 2022 to 2025 Clean Energy Implementation Plan. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Okay, thanks, Tyler. Okay, our next item here is Resolution 2217-21, if I'm not muted. That's good. Cash receipting policy. Sean, you have that one?
Yeah, thanks, Will. This resolution is actually sort of a housekeeping item and part of the district's initiative to review, revise, and update our existing policies. This one in particular is actually a new policy that we're implementing after our most recent audit from the state. While they were here, they inquired several times about a cash receipting policy and basically encouraged us to draft something more formalized than the procedures that we had in place. So the policy before you, we've met with the departments. We vetted it for accuracy amongst all the different stakeholders internally. The procedures that are in the policy are actually items that we're currently doing. We're just simply memorializing this into a formal policy for auditing purposes. So with that, staff recommends the board adopt Resolution 2217-21, adopting a cash receipting policy as presented.
Okay, questions, discussion, or do we have a motion?
I don't have any questions either.
Okay. So do we have a motion for approval?
I move that we approve Resolution 2217-21, adopting a cash receipting policy.
I second.
And moved and seconded to approve resolution. Make sure I'm not muted. Resolution 2217-21, adopting a cash receipting policy. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Okay, thank you. Thanks, Sean.
Thank you, Commissioners.
The next item is Resolution 2213-21, confirming the appointment of Sean Worthington as General Manager. And before we get into that, I have a number of points here just to bring everybody up to speed as far as history and how the process has evolved. In September the 13th, 2021, the board unanimously carried a motion to hire Sean Worthington as general manager of the district. This resolution memorializes that motion in accordance with RCW's 5416-100. The appointment of Sean will be effective January the 16th, 2022, and attached is the resolution as an employment agreement that has been vetted by the district's attorneys as well as the district's job description for general manager. Also, of course, January the 16th is Doug Nass's last day. So with approval of this, we'll have some quite a bit of overlap. The resolution includes a salary recommendation of $209,000. Now, we had a couple of executive sessions. No decisions were reached. We talked about salary ranges. We compared salaries of comparable utilities. And so the 209 is kind of a placeholder in that resolution. That $209,000 compared to similar utilities is $36,000 less than comparable average of those utilities. It's $45,500 less than the comparable median of those utilities, $44,500 less than a Milliman market study, and $84,000 less than the current general manager. The average of the comparable seven PUDs is $251,344, with a median of $260,506. The seven comparable PUDs include Mason 3, Grays Harbor, Lewis, Pacific, Franklin, Cowlitz, and Benton. And among these seven comparable PUDs, the median time for their incumbent general managers has served is only 2 years. And in 2022, the compensation for Sean will be lower than all seven of these utilities. I'd also like to point out that there's some disparity as far as size of utilities. For example, Pacific PUD is half the size of Clallam PUD, with half the budget, half the customer base. With this appointment, the board is delivering on its commitment to keep rates low, considering that any external candidate would likely, an external candidate means if we'd gone out recruited regionally or nationally. So this external candidate would likely require a salary of at least the median comparable utilities, which is over $260,000. There would be recruiting expenses, which have been estimated to be $100,000 or so, housing assistance, and relocation expenses on the order of $200,000. So this appointment of Sean at this salary level is likely saving the ratepayers $500,000 over the next 5 years. With that, I would move that the board fully support Sean and adopt Resolution 221321, appointing Sean Worthington as the general manager, effective January the 16th, expressing our appreciation and ongoing commitment between the board and Sean as our new general manager. So we got discussion or questions?
Well, Will, I think you did a really good job of running down everything we looked at. I agree. We really looked hard and looked at the numbers, and I think you did you pointed out exactly feels about it and so forth, and it. You're right. I agree that this is about as good a deal as we could find for general manager of the qualifications of Sean. And Sean especially, his accounting skills are going to be really important to us as we move into the 2028 contract negotiation process. So any other further discussion? If not, I'll second the motion.
I guess one point I didn't make was that Sean has been, we've had a succession plan set up for the last 3 years where Sean and John Purvis have shared in management decisions, and so you've got that background too. So, Rick, did you have anything?
Yeah, I believe Sean has the potential to be a fine general manager. However, I promised the voters to keep rates as low as possible. I think this benefit package is too high, and thus I will not support the motion.
Okay. Well, if Jim, if you'll second my motion, then we'll get on with it.
Yeah, I did. Well, I did. I seconded it with my comment.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded, confirming the appointment of Sean Worthington as General Manager of Public Utility District 1 of Clallam County and established compensation in terms of employment. All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
Is that a aye or no?
Aye.
Okay, good. I got you. All right, the motion has been carried. Okay, our next item is BPA post 2028 contract discussions. These are usually based on the online BPA PPC forums. Do we have any discussion on that?
I had one thing on that, Will, if you don't mind.
Yeah, sure.
Let me look at my notes here. I talked to Ryan Neal with WAPEG late Friday afternoon, And he and John Francisco, the CEO of NRU, co-authored a joint letter that went out to Kim Thompson at BPA late Friday, asking that the provider of choice process be altered and requested BPA to hold off on issuing its concept paper. This was discussed in the WAPEG meeting earlier, and the rationale is to allow public power to caucus so that we, being public power, have an opportunity to work with one another to establish an alignment on the issues and concepts identified in the BPA discussions this year. So if BPA approves the request, the meeting frequency will begin to ramp up in the new year. And as Ryan indicated in the WAPEG meeting, probably even up to 2 to 3 meetings a week in January and February. So it's also my understanding that PPC issued its own letter to Kim Thompson also on the same topic. And I know Ryan is having a meeting with her tomorrow to discuss the likelihood of BPA accepting the proposal. So just wanted to bring you up to speed on that.
So who's organizing these caucuses? And I think the objective there is to have as much activity and a public power position gel before we get late into 2024. So it's going to be an ongoing thing. So who's
doing
that?
Yeah, I think my understanding, Will, is that it will be similar to the PPC provider of choice BPA meetings, except BPA just won't be in the room except to provide sometimes analysis, according to Ryan, on different things that we have questions on. But I believe PPC will take the lead.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Yeah, I was at a couple of these meetings that Sean's referring to as well, and Sean did a good job of covering some of the key points. The BPA provider of choice meeting on 12 October, they talked a lot about transfer services and so forth, which is informative, but that didn't really relate to us too much. There was a BPA financial status meeting on the 19th of October that is germane to this, at least some of it. And I thought it was interesting, Marcus Harris basically said we're running out of borrowing authority. They showed some charts dealing with debt issues. WAPEG had some of those same charts in their presentation last week, too. One of them I thought is noteworthy. It shows their interest payments in dollars. But what they didn't talk about is what percent of their revenue or assets or whatever is that. Because I've seen in various other presentations somewhere in the 25% range is their interest payments. Now, this is sometimes hard to figure out because often they will mix up debt service and with interest and principal, and sometimes they're just talking about interest. So it's one of those things I think we really need to do a little homework on and then pay more attention to in these discussions with BPA as we move forward, because I think they're way over the industry norm for interest payments. Also, the same information chart they showed that their power interest rates are basically going to drop in the state for years and years and years. I find that hard to imagine. And the amount of capital investments that are going to be made. On the other hand, transmission is going up rather significantly in terms of interest payments, and I think that naturally and rightly reflects the need for transmission upgrades to be able to build a more resilient system. Sean, any observations on that from your end?
No, I was just going to add I sent Marcus Perry, our account executive, 4 questions sort of related to what you're talking about there. I haven't heard back from him yet. Specifically, one of the questions was, I can't remember what the chart title was, but it showed post and pre-stimulus and whether or not the debt payments included the new debt service. And I haven't got an answer yet on that, Jim.
There's been some talk of
trying
to get additional borrowing authority for Bonneville. That could be a good and a bad thing, actually. But has there been any movement on that at all?
Well, it's part of the stimulus or this whatever they're calling this package, Biden's package. I don't know if it's in or out. It kind of comes and goes. But that's a big question is, you know, these, you know, yeah, you're right, Will. So they borrow a bunch of money. But then, you know, how do we afford the interest payments? Not that we may not that we don't need these capital investments. I really believe we do. I just don't think that BPA is being square with us in terms of what that total interest debt is going to or interest expense is going to be and what we're getting for it in terms of capital investment versus revenue from those hydro projects.
Yeah, and of course, Bonneville put presentations on for PPC some time back, probably a couple of years. They were highly leveraged and they were bringing that down. So it'd be interesting to know what kind of progress they're making there.
A little bit, but it's going to head south again, I believe. I guess, I don't know if it's part of this, I guess. It was brought up in the WAPAG meeting about one of the things that has been suggested is the establishment of a regional transmission organization, an RTO, which a lot of places have and so forth. And there was a pretty good debate going back and forth about that at the WAPAG meeting, the pros and cons. But one of the problems that BPA has in joining something like that, which typically those RTOs are market-based mechanisms, is that BPA is, you know, basically they can't do that because they believe that they're statutorily limited in terms of their the prices and so forth. And I think that falls back to the old assumption that they look at the hydro system as a fixed asset, one single fixed asset, and not a group of assets that have individual cost and benefit streams. If they were more flexible with that, looking at the individual assets, I think that a market-based mechanism or an RTO might serve us in terms of getting affordable prices. That's all I've got that relates back to the 2028 stuff.
Okay. I assume we've concluded that discussion. Our next item is correspondence communications. We've got the Washington PUD Association Walkley Scholarship drawing. Tia, are you going to give the background on that? I can talk about it.
Yes, well, I certainly can. Well, each year, WPUDA, which is the Washington Public Utility District Association, seeks to award a $1,000 scholarship to a well-rounded student who demonstrates scholastic ability, community involvement, and thoughtful considerations of the services provided by all of those public utility districts. And the award is awarded annually to a high school student who's the son or daughter of a PUD employee in Washington. So today, we are going to have Commissioner Purser draw a name, and the student whose name is drawn today will be eligible for the award, and their name will be forwarded to WPUDA for consideration of this scholarship. So I'm going to run in there, Will, and have you draw a name.
So how does the process work from here on? Do they have another drawing at WPUDA, or they use some other criteria?
I believe the students have to write an essay and give information on their scholastic ability and how they've been involved and what they've been doing in the community. And I believe that the essay focuses on all the services provided by the public utility districts. And then they after looking at all of that, the board decides who presented the best
To get the $1,000. Well, good. Thank you very much. So I'm going to do that drawing. I disavow any responsibility for this whatsoever. So. Tia, you're going to. Oh, there she is. All right. The. Cheyenne Magyard, is that right?
Oh, Cheyenne Magyard?
Magard. Okay, Cheyenne Magard. So that's great. Well, good luck, Cheyenne. Yeah, one more hurdle to go. Anything else under correspondence communication, Sean?
No, that was it, Will.
Okay, the next item is commissioner reports. We've had a lot of discussion so far, but Jim, you want to lead it off again, or did you cover everything?
Okay, so let's see what else was in all that. One thing WAPAG is going to do is they're going to be presenting, they're sending their draft budget out to the to all the members on the, I think either the 11th or 17th of November. I can't read my right, but you know, I tell you what, it's hard for me to imagine they don't need to ask for more money. Those guys are doing a hell of a job, and I appreciate the level of effort. I don't know if what Sean or anybody else or John thinks about that, but or Rick, but you know, I certainly think that they're a good investment. I think we covered the concept papers. The other thing I did last Friday is I participated in the morning sessions of the Washington Solar Summit, and the two presentations I was most interested in were the tribal discussions about how tribes are getting involved with solar, and it was one of the, I guess the Quileute tribe is really really deep into a lot of solar investment. They're getting grants and so forth, and I think that we, even given our not so great solar conditions out here on the west side, need to step up our work with the macaws especially and the Elwha to see what else we can do to maybe help that become part of our resiliency efforts and so forth, which is above and beyond what may be required with CEDAT or anything like that. I also listened into the rooftop solar presentation, and it was pretty interesting. There's some folks, a lot of the folks in that business are really digging deep into all the different little technical issues that come up with rooftop solar, both from a technical side and a policy side, an investment side, return on investment, all that kind of stuff. And I guess what I, the overall impression when I get into a lot of the details, there's some real pros working on. Anytime there's a little bug that somebody throws into it, they're all over it and say, well, here's how we can fix that, and here's how we can take care of that. So I thought it was, rooftop solar is sort of, I think, underplayed by BPA, yet it could serve, particularly with these demand increases that are supposed, because of warmer weather, and hell's already hot enough on the east side of the state. But that's good solar country over there, and it would seem to me BPA ought to be investing or pushing more in terms of rooftop solar to take off some of that peak summer demand that that obviously that could take care of. Anyway, that's all I got, Will.
Thanks, Jim. Rick?
In the last week, I attended a Bonneville Provider of Choice meeting and the WAPAG meeting. Both meetings have been covered. The only thing I wanted to share was during the WAPAG meeting, there was a mention of a paper that the public generating pool has recently released. And it's the name of the paper is Organized Market Retrospect, a review of organized market efforts in the West. I read the executive summary and found it excellent. They provided a summary of a number of different RTO initiatives that have been launched and failed here in the Northwest, Indigo, RTO West, Grid West, and I must have to own up that when I was working in the industry, I was involved in all three of those failed activities. But I would highly recommend that paper. It was a very good retrospect of what the Northwest has attempted to do with respect to putting a RTO together. That's it.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I plan on reading that, but I really appreciate your views on this, too.
Yeah, that was a major topic at the WAPEG meeting, and somebody brought up the fact that a few years ago, most PUD commissioners had little tags, hell no RTO. But, of course, that's all changed with CETA and the renewable requirements that we're facing. So there's still concern about CAISO being that RTO. And during that discussion, there was a lot of talk about the history of California debacles in the power industry, going all the way back to, what was his name, Governor Gray, was that his name?
Mm-hmm.
So, and the Enron thing and so on. They've had some pretty bad false starts. So, and given that CAISO is still designed specifically for the benefit of California, it is California-centric, and there's governance concerns there, even with EIM. The CAISO board can veto EIM or dictate EIM requirements. So there's still some concern there. I think there's some hurdles to get over. You know, under an RTO, presently, BPA is the balancing authority. It's the it owns and operates the transmission system. It owns the generation as well as being a balancing authority. And under an RTO, it's kind of uncertain how all that would be handled and what the end product or end benefit or lack of benefit to public power would be. So more to come on that. I'm sure there'll be a lot of discussions about that. Additionally, I'm got to go over to Kennewick, where we're having a joint Energy Northwest Executive Board of Directors meeting, and then we're having an Energy Forum. The Energy Forum is something that Energy Northwest, as a joint operating agency, puts together every year, and they talk about issues, all energy issues, not just nuclear, but solar and hydro, which Energy North has, and wind. Energy North has all of those resources. So there's usually some pretty good speakers. And so anyway, anybody that gets an opportunity to participate, that would be great. And I guess that's all I have.
Information.
I'll tell you what, let me send out that announcement to, well, I'll send it to T and she can forward it on to the other commissioners and staff. She hasn't already done that.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks. I believe that's going to be on Thursday afternoon. So, all right, staff reports. I guess we've got two. Sean, you have an announcement. You want to do that first?
Yeah. District attorneys are requesting a special meeting on Tuesday, November 2nd, which is next Tuesday, to conduct an executive session to discuss potential litigation with legal counsel representing the PUD pursuant to RCW 42.30.110. So my intent is to see if all three of the commissioners are available next Tuesday at 11 or 1 p.m. And their time frame they gave me was about 2 hours that they need.
Those times are open for me, but I don't know if I want to spend 2 hours with lawyers.
Well,
it's you said it's when?
Tuesday, November 2nd, and the two proposed times was either 11 a.m. or 1 p.m.
I prefer 1 if that works for other people.
1 o'clock.
Yeah, that's okay.
Okay, so we're on for 1 o'clock.
1 o'clock. Okay. Great. Thank you.
All right, our next item is a follow-up on the customer easement request. And I'm not sure who's doing that.
Hi there, I'll be doing this, Colin.
Hi, Colin, good. Good man. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Chair. Basically, a customer on Green Tree Lane requested power to her property. The contractor she hired was responsible for digging the trench and cutting through the right-of-way that abuts Dr. Marte's property. This also required cutting of Dr. Marte's driveway. The contractor made reasonable effort to clean up the area after work was complete and is scheduled to have the driveway patched. Dr. Marte contacted PUD with concerns with the way the landscape was left by the contractor. This included larger rocks, unlevel ground, and lack of seeding. Normally, PUD would not get involved in restoration work of a contractor's supply trench, but after multiple phone calls and emails between the contractor, customer, PUD, it was determined that the PUD would remediate the site to a higher standard that the PUD typically uses when digging their own trenches. This included removing those larger rocks, leveling. We added topsoil and seeded the site. After this work was done by our crew, Dr. Marte expressed satisfaction with the work that was done. Another concern Dr. Marte had was the driveway cut that was done in the process of supplying power to the neighbor. PUD made it clear that we would not provide patching of the driveway because it is the contractor responsibility. The contractor would need to fully repair the driveway. I spoke to the contractor who's responsible for this on the 20th of October, and he let me know that he would have requested the batch plan or put a request into the batch plan for the driveway to be repaired, but they've not gotten a firm date at that point yet. Given that they have put the request in the batch plant, there's no reason it shouldn't be done. I don't see any reason for that. The batch plant does close November 12th, but opens again in mid-March. But because they have this on their schedule, they typically group jobs together, and we actually have a couple in that area that's going to be done soon. So I fully believe it'll be taken care of. I let Dr. Martin know about this, and he seemed to accept the results there.
So this is an asphalt driveway?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, good. Yeah, they're running out of runway as far as weather, but maybe they can get it done. I've received a couple of emails from this customer. He seems to be fairly happy with what we've done. So
yeah.
Thank you, Colin, for handling that.
You bet.
Colin, where's this customer located?
Their address is 3007 Green Tree Lane.
Where is that?
So it's over on kind of the East Port Angeles area. It's relocated right on the bluffs. It's off of Larch in Port Angeles.
Okay. Have one of the commissioners got back to this customer? I got a voicemail about a week ago. But I didn't think it was in District 3, but I got
sounds
one
like,
of us
sounds like it's in Rick's district,
with.
I believe, I guess. I actually sent back, I forwarded this on to staff and informed the customer that staff would handle it, which it sounds like they have done, so.
Okay, well, as long as, you know, you made contact with the customer, I think that's good.
Yeah, if they were in my district, they never contacted me. This is the first I've heard of it.
Yeah. Well, that's not too unusual. But anyway. Okay, good. So that we'll call that one resolved. T, did we capture any action items?
I did not, Will.
Okay. All right, moving on to our second comments from the public. Sean, do we have any?
Nothing in chat, but if anybody would like to make a comment, let me know, please. And hearing none again.
Okay, good. All right, we do not have an executive session, so if there's no other business to come before the board, we will stand adjourned. Thanks for participating.
Thank you.